Time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. This is John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Elise Glink joins us from thinkglink.com on Mondays. And there she is again. Hi, Elise. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hi, John. Doing just fine. Thank you.
Let's, as always, talk a little bit about real estate. What's the top news there?
Well, it's interesting, but homes, not surprisingly, are costing a lot more. They're now an average of 32.1% of our gross income. It's more like 45% after tax, depending on where you live. And because of the expense, the rising cost of homes, 65% of prospective buyers say that now is a bad time to buy a house, as opposed, which is a complete opposite of where we were about a year ago.
Well, let's see, a year ago, everybody was trying to buy a house, but they were paying inflated prices, so it was a good time to sell. Was it a good time to buy last October?
Well, given that the average price of homes has gone up over 20% year over year, I would say that, yes, last year was an excellent time to buy a house. And it's gotten expensive. The other thing that's going on, of course, is that mortgage interest rates are rising as well. And so not only is the home itself more expensive, but the funding that you use to pay for it is more expensive.
Can you talk about it regionally? Is it the same throughout Chicagoland, throughout the country?
Well, what's interesting about what's going on in Chicago, of course, is that we're not quite as, we haven't seen the same level of increase as the other top 20 markets. And when you go down even a little bit further, you know, Chicago has seen growth of about 15 to 16% year over year, still healthy by any normal stretch. And I hesitate to use the word normal, but in a normal year, homes appreciate just over the rate of inflation. So right now, with inflation being a little elevated, you might expect 3 to 5% increase in your home value. And yet we've seen 15-ish% here in the city of Chicago and metro area, whereas some of our higher-flying neighbors are seeing home prices increase as much as 25 to 30%.
Talk to us a little bit about renters. We always talk about homeowners. What about renters?
Well, here's the thing. You know, when homeownership gets more expensive, people turn to renting. And what people are finding is that rents are also going up. So this is part of, if you think about it from the 60,000-foot level, this is part of not having nearly enough homes available to buy or even to rent. And so we're about 6 million, roughly, depends on who you talk to, 6 million homes short for home buyers out there, but we are also short on affordable housing for renters. And so what you're seeing is that in some cases, three Chicago suburbs transitioned from being owner majority to renter majority, according to Rent Cafe. That's part of Yardi, which helps landlords manage their properties. But DeKalb switched. They were the top suburb to switch from a renter majority population of the last decade. They are now 58% renters, and obviously a smaller number of homeowners. And then Gary and Waukegan also hit the renter majority mark. 53% and 50% of their residents live in a rental unit as opposed to homeowners.
So more people in those three communities rent than own.
Yeah, and we're seeing other communities grow as well. Carpentersville, they had 67% more renters over the last decade. Gurnee up 56%. Park Forest, 47%. Glendale Heights, Mundelein, Lansing, all Bolingbrook, all up 40%+. And then you get into Bolingbrook, Woodstock, Lombard, and Buffalo Grove. Buffalo Grove was up 36% in terms of the number of renters that it has.
DeKalb's a college town, so I'm not surprised to hear there's more renters than homeowners there. Although it's a big enough town, it could maybe support a homeowner base without the university. But you say that's transitioned to renter-friendly or renter-majority. But I wonder about these other towns. Does that say something about the economy that people are struggling and so they can't afford homes, so they're renting? Is that the bottom line here?
I think that's what we're being told, is that it's getting more expensive to buy. People can't, anecdotally, you read this in all of the major papers, you know, journalists find people who can't afford to buy. They tell those stories anecdotally. But when you look at the data, you simply have to understand that our incomes have not jumped 20-something percent in a year, and yet the cost of housing has.
Okay, so that's a little bit on the real estate front, both for owners and renters. Let's pick it up here in a minute with Elise Glink. Elise, let's talk a little bit about the supply chain. What's the news that you're looking at there?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Another day, another shortage. We have a shortage in silicon. This is because of a production cut in China. It's trying to curb power consumption. So we're seeing that metal of material skyrocket 300% in the last 2 months. And given that silicon is used for everything from microchips to concrete, it's extremely expensive, and that's going to be trickling down. And that feeds into the whole thing on inflation just continuing to go up. And there's such a dichotomy right now between experts as to whether we're going to continue to see inflation rise or settle back down. The Fed keeps saying it's going to settle down, and yet you see all kinds of other supply chain hits, like in books. We're having trouble getting book materials here, whether it's the paper or it's people. Once the material is here, enough people at the factory putting those books together, it's just become a yet another problem. And overall, everybody's a little bit worried about Christmas. So I was at Costco over the weekend picking up some groceries, and it's really interesting to see that Christmas is full on display, and here we are just in October, for Amazon. Today is officially the beginning of Black Friday, apparently. USA Today reported that Amazon has listed and started listing all of its Black Friday holiday deals, and I think they're starting to sell them as well. So people are getting a jump on the Christmas season.
I guess they are. I'm not a big Christmas. I don't do a lot of the Christmas shopping for my family. Brenda tends to do most of that for us. And I don't know that either of us has done any of it. And it's I keep hearing that. Boy, Christmas is going to come early this year. You better shop for the supply chain problems. And yet I just can't do it. I hear that. But it's not getting me to do anything about it. So I'm going to go Christmas shopping in November and December.
That's really cool.
And there won't be anything left, or you won't be able to get it. And I think there's going to be a lot of gift cards and cash this Christmas because of the supply chain problems.
I don't think people are going to turn that down, John. I think, and that's going to be sort of interesting as well, right? I mean, will people just start giving a Bitcoin as a Christmas gift? Well, that's a nice Christmas gift, given that it's priced at a $47,000 and change today. But I could imagine something like that happening as well.
Or an ETF, maybe just a share of a Bitcoin, something like that. You know, about the supply chain issues, though, I want to talk to you more about books. But also, what was it the other day that we were talking about? I asked our listeners to tell us things that you're having trouble getting. And so appliances and windshields and more than a few people said tombstones. They said that the stone comes from... Because I thought maybe it's a lack of skilled tradesmen to do the carving. I don't know, maybe machines do it now. They said a lot of that stone comes from Europe or other parts of the world. It's on container ships. It comes over here. Then it has to get shipped to wherever you're having it done locally. I don't know. I haven't bought a tombstone. But they, right away, both for pets and for human beings. But I mean... You know, it's a tragedy when you lose somebody, you want to get a tombstone, and then you got to wait a year for it, and it's just another frustration for people.
Well, you know, that's interesting because it really brings up another point, John, which is over the last 18 months, we've had an extraordinary number of people in this country die. And, you know, in addition to obviously the 700,000 people with COVID for the pandemic, there is something like over a million other deaths that were not expected. And by that, I mean that by people who actually count the numbers and look at, you know, what a typical year of death in the United States would look like due to other illnesses, you know, aging of the population and what have you. And statisticians look at this and they say that it's like there's another million people on top of the 700,000 unaccounted for. And so you could imagine that causing some delays in things like tombstones because people need to bury their loved ones and all of the people that we've said goodbye to in the past year.
That's an interesting point. I remember when that was a point of controversy. If someone has diabetes or cancer or some other debilitating illness and they get COVID and they die, do you say that diabetes killed them or COVID killed them? Which column do you put the check mark in? So people who are arguing that the numbers were inflated were saying that you're getting COVID counts when maybe they should have been counted for other reasons. We don't seem to be that interested in that conversation anymore. But I'll take your point that we certainly have 700,000 COVID deaths. And then how many people have perished only because their life got so much more complicated medically, physically, because of COVID-19? But maybe now it's counted as something else, not even COVID. Who knows?
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I think a lot about what's going on in Alaska. So Alaska is a big hotspot right now. And there have been a bunch of news stories over the weekend, really, about doctors having to ration care. They simply don't have enough materials and hospitals to get heart patients. And, you know, if you have a heart attack and you need certain kind of care, but there's no bed for you, you know, what do you do? And so that's, I think that's probably played out, you know, behind the scenes a little bit this year, over the last 18 months in particular. And of course, my heart goes out to everybody who's lost people. I've lost close people to us as well, both from COVID and who knows why.
And what you just described is probably a better example of what I was trying to say, right? So that doesn't get counted as a COVID death, but what do you know? You couldn't get the heart care that you needed because the beds were taken up by COVID patients. So you've passed away earlier than normal. The numbers go up. All of this because of the maybe rush on tombstones. You know, somebody told us there were 73 container ships off the ports in Los Angeles last week. We were talking about supply chains. And those things hold cities worth of stuff, all kinds of stuff. There are 73 of them floating out in the ocean waiting for their turn to queue through.
Yeah, there's actually a website that shows you at sanpedro.com. It actually shows you the Southern California marine traffic map. And if you look at it, it actually just Google container ships waiting map. And what it does is it shows you.
No, I don't want to.
There are ships all over the world and that are just sort of sitting there waiting for their turn to be unloaded. And of course, it's delayed, not only, you know, because of COVID. People are sick. They're not running these, you know, the longshoremen. There may be some women in there, too, but they're called longshoremen. You know, are not operating at full capacity. And so a lot of these things, if, you know, again, back to Costco and other places where you buy your staples, we're seeing a diaper shortage at the moment. There's toilet paper limitations again, paper towels. So a lot of the stuff is sitting on ships waiting to be unloaded.
Just one last note about this. It's a note that you shared with our producer, and I just wanted to read it. About the book shortage, there isn't much, said the New York Times, anyone in the book business can do to fix any of this. Retailers, authors, and distributors are pleading with readers and customers to shop or order early. Publishers are planning farther out in advance and sometimes even putting shipments of books on planes. One publisher said it currently costs roughly 35 to 50 cents per book to send titles across by water and $5 to $8 by air per book. No one knows when things will go back to normal, but it won't be until long after this holiday season.
All right. Yep. As a book author, I have to say, shop early, and it's nice to have digital books. They certainly sell for less money. They're a little bit hard to wrap, though.
On everybody's Christmas list this year is 100 questions every first-time home buyer should ask. It's by Elise Glink. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Elise.
Thanks, John.
Jim Dahlke is a senior editor at Chicago Inno, and he joins us Mondays at this time. Welcome back, Jim. I hope you're well.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the best year in Chicago tech, which was or is 2021.
Yeah, that's right. That is according to Mark Tebbe, the executive chairman of Chicago Next. He said that last week at the Chicago Venture Summit, which is an annual gathering of investors and startup founders that happens every year since about 2014. Last year's event was the first in a couple of years, actually, due to COVID closing the event in 2020. And really what the Chicago Venture Summit is all about is sort of gathering investors and startup founders together to get some deals made and to grow Chicago's tech ecosystem and really to show the city off to investors from outside of town. So a big piece of the Venture Summit is getting out-of-town investors into the room and meeting some of the local startups. And, you know, Chicago really believes that it has a lot to show off this year. Like the city's startups have raised over $5 billion in venture funding already in 2021. That's well beyond 2020's record of $2.8 billion. And it's about a dozen so new unicorn startups in the city with valuations of $1 billion or more. So quite a bit to show off. And the city was pretty excited to get investors in the room to take a look at what's going on in Chicago's startup scene.
You just answered my next question. So that's not subjective. That's dollars raised and almost double what last year was, even though it was 2020. That was a record year. Now we're over five, huh? Wow.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. When this event started, Mark Tebby told me, in 2014 we had a lot of dreams and aspirations. Now we have a lot of companies that have made it. There's a lot of proof in the pudding here about what Chicago's tech ecosystem has sort of grown into and become, and they believe that there's more growth to come. So certainly there was quite a bit of thumping the chest a bit in Chicago and kind of showing that, hey, there's a lot happening here in the tech scene.
What is it? By the way, $5 billion doesn't mean $5 billion has been spent in the city. That's venture capital raised or the valuations of those companies?
That is venture capital raised. So from investors both locally and out of state.
Yeah. I just wonder what the translation is. I wonder how many jobs or how much money in the local market that means, how much taxes, people are paying. I wonder what the micro metric is on that number.
Yeah, I mean, for jobs, it's a big deal because, a lot of these fast-growing companies are adding people as fast as they can, and that's what a lot of this venture capital is used for as well. So as these companies continue to grow and to scale, they need bodies to help continue to rev up that growth. And so a lot of the venture capital goes into growing teams.
But when I hear these stories, I think, okay, so then where are those jobs? Is there a site like Chicago Venture Capital Jobs board.com? We always hear about this money and all of this growth. I wonder how people can kind of hitch their wagon to that around here.
Yeah, so at Chicago Inno, we have a jobs section on our website that has a lot of open roles. There's a couple of different locations across the city where people can go online and find a kind of open roles. But yeah, I mean, in Chicago, there's quite a bit of momentum in terms of the job growth side. I mentioned those about a dozen or so companies that are now valued at $1 billion. That comes with fresh funding this year, which is going to be used towards hiring. So businesses like, Cameo and Project 44 and ShipBob and ClearCover and lots of these businesses that have raised 100+ million-dollar funding rounds are hiring like crazy in the city.
Yeah, I guess just think about some of the hot businesses you hear about. Go to their website or go to Chicago Inno. Let's talk about Chicago startup that helps you find romance novels. Boy, that's a hole in the market I did not expect. What's this all about?
Yeah, so this company is called Verve Romance, and they just raised $1.5 million the other week. And they've kind of taken an interesting route to the finding romance novels. It's not really about searching for author or searching for the title. They help you find romance novels by the subject and the plot line of the book. If you're into vampires, for example, in your romance novels, you can search that and find, books all along the brand there that you're looking for. And so, that's a little seed funding to grow. And they're also going to introduce new products as well. They've got some e-commerce stuff that they're going to be able to sell and also open up a big social component to let romance readers interact with other folks online. And they raised some funding for some big names around town. 1871 CEO Betsy Ziegler has joined their board, and former CEO of 1871 Howard Tolman invested, along with the former CEO of Ancestry.com. So some big names behind this company that's seeing some interesting growth.
Well, you think you could just Google that, but it's a search engine. You'll type in what you're interested in. It'll recommend the books, huh?
That's exactly right. And a little more useful than Google, right? Kind of like a very niche search engine, right? Mm-hmm. So providing you a little more context and some better search results, hopefully, than what you get with just a generic Google search.
And is that Verve Romance? Is that what we're talking about?
That's right, Verve Romance. They were started as a Chicago startup called Book in Maine.
Yeah,
and has since rebranded.
Got it. Okay, that was my next question. Okay, there's a startup for people with OCD. Talk about that.
Yeah, so this is a startup called NOCD, and they raised $33 million the other week. They're a really interesting app that connects people who are dealing with obsessive-compulsive disorder with one-on-one virtual therapy sessions. They see a really big need in the market, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic there. teletherapy app has really exploded over the last 18 months. They're doing currently about 12,000 telehealth visits per month. They say that they've built the world's largest OCD patient community. And so, it's a really interesting business. It started by a founder who was dealing with the OCD himself. He had to quit playing sports in college because it just, was a crippling issue for him, and he wanted to go out and help others. So $33 million for this really interesting telehealth app here in Chicago.
But we too often maybe talk about the bad things on the internet, the bad things with computers, the bad things with the web. And then you hear about stuff like this, and you go, what a wonderful application for people who might not otherwise ever have gotten that sort of personal help. I love the sound of that and a story like that from Jim Dahlke, senior editor over at Chicago Inno. Good to talk to you, Jim. We'll visit again. Thanks for your time and reporting.
Thanks, John.
Have a good day. It's 12:44. More business news from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The former John Hancock Center is losing one of its largest tenants. Cranes reports SMS Assist is leaving the Mag Mile and moving to One Prudential Plaza. SMS is leasing 114,000 square feet and will become the biggest tenant in the entire two-building Prudential Plaza complex. Crane says the lease is seen as a major commitment to a downtown office at a time when many companies are rethinking their workspace needs. Electric pickup maker Rivian Automotive has disclosed a net loss of nearly $1 billion in the first half of the year. The revelation came in paperwork filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission for the company's initial public offering. Rivian is making electric trucks at a plant in downstate Bloomington Normal. The size of Rivian's IPO is $100 million, a placeholder that'll likely change when terms of the share sale are set. Rivian is aiming for a valuation of $80 billion. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
So today is what, National Food Day with the business of food and more? Here's Steve Alexander.
First Monday of National Pork Month, Johnny. It's also the first day of voting for the Pork and Pigskin Championship, a contest to determine the best high school concession stand pork chop sandwich in Illinois.
It's a fun thing, brings a little bit of exposure to the pork producers in high school football.
That is John Novak of John Hersey High School in Arlington Heights, one of 79 schools who think they have the best concession stand pork chop sandwich. The contest is sponsored by the High School Association and the Illinois Pork Producers. How the voting works in just a minute, but let's hear about that Hersey High School pork chop sandwich.
We're serving a maple orange chipotle pork chop sandwich.
Yummy.
We put a glaze together, a marinade, and it's got probably about a dozen different ingredients to it, and we let our pork chops marinate overnight, and it gives them a great flavor.
All righty. And tell us about the meat, John. How big are they?
They're probably anywhere from a third to a half a pound. They're pretty good-sized pork chops.
That sounds like a two-hander, John. All for, what a bargain, $3 to $4 for these sandwiches. The High School Association started on the online voting at 8 o'clock this morning. And it runs for 1 week, and it's purely a popularity contest in this first stage. The top four vote-getters in each of the four regions advance to the Savory 16. Then in-person tasting and judging will narrow the field to the Flavorful 4. And after more tasting and judging, the winner will be revealed at halftime of the Class 6A State Football Championship on November 27th. The champion gets, bragging rights, of course, a state championship banner, a golden spatula, and $500 to spend on more pork chops. You can start voting right now at this website, ihsa.org/porkandpigskins. ihsa.org/porkandpigskins. Tomorrow, we will continue celebrating National Pork Month by digging into just what's inside that McRib sandwich, which comes back November 1st, by the way. Today's Farm to Your Belly feature, National Taco Day, National Vodka Day, and National Cinnamon Bun Day. Enjoy. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
All right, Amy Guth, let's talk a little bit about Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin, and William Shatner.
I didn't see this coming, but I didn't think this was going to be a topic that we were going to talk about at the business lunch, as you said, but indeed. So Jeff Bezos, his company, Blue Origin, is planning to send the actor, William Shatner, into space. This is going to happen on October 12th. He's going to go with Blue Origin's Vice President of Mission and Flight Operations, Audrey Powers, and a couple of other folks. So again, it's October 12th. They're going to do a live webcast of this mission. Coverage is going to start about 8 a.m. Eastern, so about 9 o'clock, about 7 o'clock our time. And who else are you going to send to space, right? Now, interestingly, this would make him, if the mission goes according to plan and they do take off and weather permits and all that, he would be the oldest person to fly to space. This was recently a record set by Wally Funk, the aerospace pioneer who she flew at age 82 just a month ago on that first Blue Origin launch. So this would top that because Shatner is 90. But we will have to watch that and see what happens on that live stream and see if it, you know, hopefully weather holds and this mission is successful. But the billionaire space thing continues for sure.
You know, I vacillate between the danger inherent in this and the folly of it. And then on the other side, the fun and the recreation of it. And they're sprinting to the fun and recreation. Hey, let's go up into space. Never mind that. It strikes me as being an inherently dangerous business still. So I kind of go back and forth between, yeah, what a fun idea. That's how you progress the industry. Or wait a minute, are we ready for this? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm exactly with you. Because sometimes I'm like, wow, space is so fascinating. Look at what they're doing. The other hand, I'm like, I don't know that I would do that. I don't know that I would get into that rocket just yet. But, you know, this is a big step for all these tests. And I think making such a big public show of it is part of kind of jump-starting the idea of space tourism, because that's not going to be a thing that's really in financial reach for a lot of people. But even once it is more widespread, I think a lot of people are going to have trouble kind of getting their head around this idea of just tourism to space. So I think by doing these very big public launches, attaching some records to it, like the oldest person in space, things like that, it's kind of helping to sort of launch that thinking in that direction.
Yeah, we'll break down some of the mental barriers that people like me have. Talk about the airline industry. What are you seeing these days?
Yeah, so CNBC has reported that the International Air Transport Association, they earlier today were talking about the forecast for the business. And they gave some numbers that I thought were really, really pretty compelling. So they expect to lose close to $12 billion next year. And that seems like such a giant number. But when you look at previous numbers, it gets a lot smaller. It's actually kind of a heartening number. So in 2020, net loss for the airline industry globally were $137.7 billion with a B. Originally, IATA had estimated that that'd be around $126.5 billion. So that was a pretty substantial jump. And then 2021 is going to come in a little bit worse than they originally had predicted. It's going to total about $51.8 billion. They had originally forecast about $47.7 billion, but still, when we're looking at a net loss of $137.7 billion, dropping that number down to $12 billion for 2022 really is progress for airlines for sure.
Volvo's getting in the electric car business.
Yeah, I thought this was very interesting. So they're planning a $2.9 billion IPO for very, very ambitious plans around their electric vehicle business. They want to, by 2025, nearly double sales to 1.2 million vehicles, and they want half of them to be battery electric. Then they say they want the entire lineup of all Volvos to be electric by 2030. The CEO was talking about this and said, we want to be the fastest in the business to transform. 2030, no more combustion cars. Pretty ambitious. 2030 is a number, that's kind of a goal that a lot of automakers have set, but Volvo is really coming out of the gate with a lot of ambition around this and a lot of might, saying we want to get there first, we want to do this the biggest. And they also want to transform a part of their business that I thought was pretty interesting. They're going to start shifting to a little bit more direct sales, kind of that Tesla model of online sales and direct sales to customers, kind of cutting out that idea of going to the dealership, working more one-on-one with customers and working more online.
Wow. 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 That's amazing. All right. Well done. Thank you, Amy.